Hey, deserving listeners, let's continue following the Ruby Frankie Jody Hildebrandt story of abuses and torture on children. Trigger warning, of course, for all of these episodes. So let's get to it. My name is Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor. In case you don't know me, I will say to you that as a therapist and a professor for over 25 years, in the beginning of my career, I did have a fair amount of experience being hired by Child Protective Services to go into homes and to help to end abuse in homes. And I want to remind everyone that I'm watching these clips on the National Desk YouTube channel. The National Desk. Let's watch.
I want to go down to Brian Schnee joining us live after speaking exclusively with the niece of Jody Hildebrandt.
And Brian, what did she say about watching all of this unfold?
Okay, so this is the YouTube channel, The National Desk, and they are about to throw to a journalist who interviewed the niece of Jody Hildebrandt.
Jessie Hildebrandt lived with Jody and received therapy with air quotes, as she described it to me today. Jessie described abuse while living with Jody back in 2009 or so. She went into detail telling me she was tied up, duct taped.
Okay, again, seriously, trigger warning. If you have been abused in this way or this triggers you, do not watch this video. Don't follow this story unless you're talking with your therapist. It can actually harm you, it can re-traumatize you. And if you don't know the answer to that question, you should get treatment so you know the answer to that question. But moving forward, we have, her name is Jessie, the niece of Jody. And interesting that she's saying that the abuses were happening back in 2009 when Jessie, the niece, was under the care of Jody or something.
While living with Jody back in 2009 or so, she went into detail telling me she was tied up, duct taped, blindfolded, experienced severe isolation, severe emotional.
When we see so many news stories with this kind of reporting, and if you see a lot of it, you become desensitized to it. But maybe a lot of you aren't. But just if you are desensitized to it and you can handle it, always make sure you can handle it. Just imagine that. Children. It's not okay to do to anybody, but children, innocent little children. It's monstrous. And interesting that this is Jody Hildebrandt's MO that goes back to 2009, the duct tape, the starving, the tying people up, this sort of thing. Yeah. Wow. And then you think, well, if Jody Hildebrandt has been on the loose for at least 14 years, how much damage has she done? And she's taught how many people about this? And then you got to wonder, is Ruby Frankie actually just a lieutenant of Jody? Because the way it comes across in the reporting, it's like you have Ruby Frankie, who's this ringleader, and the Jody Hildebrandt person is just someone that is glomming on to Ruby Frankie's fame or something. But, you know, it could have actually been the other way around. I don't know.
Spiritual and psychological abuse, among other things, such as being forced to sleep outside in the snow. I asked her, among many other things.
Yeah. So in the deep dive on the Duggars, I was told by some of the patrons, some of the listeners of the podcast, that there's this book written by an individual named, I think, Michael Pearl. And I can't remember the name of the book. Let me look it up. The book is called To Train Up a Child. To Train Up a Child. And in that book, he recommends abuse of children, physical abuse, and also disciplining children with cold, not only with having them sleep out in the snow, but also with cold baths, ice baths, with hosing them down outside while it's cold, that sort of thing. And the way it sounds to me, they want to cause pain. They want to abuse the children. The book is recommending that and appealing to parents who want to do this kind of abuse to children. But they know that you can't just slap a child or hit a child or push them down the stairs. You can only do things to them that are underneath the threshold of what is considered a crime, right? And if you have a child that's... Now, that absolutely is considered a crime to have a child sleep outside in the snow, absolutely. But it's not as discreet or there's not as much evidence about it as much as if you, for example, punched a child in the face and left them with a black eye and they go to school, right? That's much more noticeable and much more reportable. So the way it seemed to me, and I didn't realize this during the Duggar deep dive, but the more I thought about it, the more it seemed to me that the book, To Train Up a Child, which was published in 1994, by the way, you know, some wacko writes a book. The problem is that a lot of people around the world consider this book to be this godsend, this Bible of parenting, giving them permission or giving them guidance, this kind of thing. And this author, Michael Pearl, became quite rich. And by the way, from the reporting, Michael Pearl, his organization, because it's considered a religious organization, he doesn't have to pay taxes. Just think about that. It's government subsidized abuse of children. That's what it is. So the problem is this book became very popular, and it became extremely popular within the evangelical Christian movement, maybe even in the Mormon movement, I don't know, I could imagine that, and also within the IBLP movement, the Bill Gothard, that whole thing that the Duggars were a part of. So once you have ministers, preachers, and whatever, charismatic leaders pushing this book, then the book really takes off, right? And then you have this systematic movement and a religion that is teaching all their people that it's actually not only a good idea to beat your children and following the advice of this book, but it's actually your godly duty to do this. So you have probably parents who otherwise wouldn't be doing these kinds of abuses, but are brainwashed to do them. And you just think about the millions of kids who have been abused because of this book and because of the support it had within the evangelical, Christian, Mormon, IBLP communities. I want to be clear, there are plenty of Christians, I know them, they're in my family, who would never do this sort of thing. Christians, there's a lot of flavors to Christians, but we all know that there are many Christian organizations that are unfortunately political and are highly problematic. So, you know, it's not Christianity that's the problem. It's the group that's the problem and the way they interpret Christianity in the Bible. Anyway, so this, you know, the Jody Hildebrandt stuff, what we're hearing now, reports from the niece, it's reflective of this massive problem that is under the radar in our society. And that's what I was alerted to when I was doing the Duggar deep dive. I had no idea that there was basically this systematic movement for decades now that is preaching and systematizing and solidifying the abuse of children. I didn't know that. And now I do. And many of you have even told me you're a victim of that. You know, it's one thing to have an abusive parent. It's another thing to be abused by a parent that you know has the support of the church and the organization and the cult and the community. That is particularly hard. That's particularly hurtful.
If she's met Ruby Frankie, to which she had told me she had not and hadn't heard of her until all of this. She told me that she's seen some of her videos on YouTube now, found them to be quite triggering, but telling from her own experiences.
It's been a really interesting experience watching everyone focus on Ruby, and I understand why, but this is Jody. These are Jody's words. These are Jody's ideas. These are over decades old, so.
Interesting. I mean, I don't know if Jesse necessarily knows the pathway that Ruby Frankie took. Maybe she does, but it's possible that they both were like this before they even knew each other. But there's also a good chance, and I trust Jesse's conclusion a lot more than mine, obviously, because she lived through it and has been close to it, that Jody was the one that developed this mindset decades ago and has been abusing kids and recommending this sort of abuse to many other parents, and that Ruby Frankie got sucked up in it. Maybe Ruby Frankie was in that direction, but then got sucked up in it, you know? Like, I don't know, just speculation, but if Ruby Frankie were left to her own devices, she would have abused her kids in the way that we might be seeing in the videos, but maybe, who knows, just speculating, she wouldn't have tied up her children, duct taped them, that sort of thing. But because of Jody Hildebrandt's charismatic leadership or convincing or something, then Jody actually convinced Ruby to go even further. That's one story. Another story is that Ruby Frankie is a monster times 10 beyond Jody Hildebrandt, and it just looks different. Yeah, we just don't know. But Jesse's saying that Jody Hildebrandt is the problem. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, hopefully the investigators and the law actually pays attention to all this. Because, you know, the public, Ruby Frankie is the face of this story because she had the YouTube channel. But hopefully the agencies and the officials actually take the time to not just focus on Ruby Frankie, but also on Jodi Hildebrandt. And I guess they should look into all the parents who are following the program, this connections thing, and start investigating all those other, I mean, the sort of person that would be attracted to Jodi Hildebrandt and Ruby Frankie, anyone who's liked any of their videos should be investigated. Right? I mean, I'm not saying that you send the army in and you round them all up, but I'm just saying, right? There's a problem, and let's start here.
I have heard this term called mommy guilt quite a bit. Have you heard that, or maybe you use that term? Every time I hear that term, I think.
Okay, so this video on YouTube is on the YouTube channel called The Law and Crime Network. So let's watch.
Jodi Hildebrandt was taken into custody in Ivins, Utah last week after police said Ruby Frankie's son climbed out of a window at her home with duct tape on his ankles and wrists.
Ugh, just think about that innocent little boy being treated like, you know, you hear about these stories, you see the pictures of the kids, the six kids, and then you actually see the child, you know, I didn't know which one it was, and to know which one it was is, it just breaks your heart, you know? I treat people, it breaks my heart to hear about cases that are 5% this. When I hear about people, children who are overly chastised by their parents, or their parents are on their phone all the time, like, that absolutely breaks my heart. This is like, this shatters my heart.
Thursday, the Daily Mail is reporting that during a hearing over custody of Ruby Frankie's minor children, she claimed that one of them molested their siblings and other neighborhood children over several years.
So who's the she in that? Is that Ruby Frankie? During a hearing that was determining where the kids were going to go, that Ruby Frankie said that one of the kids in her family was a... let's hear that again.
And get this, on Thursday, the Daily Mail is reporting that during a hearing over custody of Ruby Frankie's minor children, she claimed that one of them molested their siblings and other neighborhood children over several years. The reporter said that Frankie sobbed during the interview.
Okay, so we're learning that during the hearing recently, Ruby Frankie discloses that one of the children was sexually abusing the younger children in the family and other children in the neighborhood. So we're looking at another Josh Duggar situation, potentially, another Duggar family scenario, and possibly similar factors that could be speculated as contributing to the, you know, in all my thinking around the Duggar deep dive that we made, I had a chance to really think about how being in a Christian cult, like, you know, not every Mormon is like this, but many Mormon organizations are very much like a cult or are a cult in that they're high control, in that there's a charismatic leader that can do no wrong, in that abuses are covered up, in that everyone is being harmed within the cult, particularly people that don't have power like children. So I'm not saying all Mormons like this, but many are. So similar to IBLP, which is the cult that the Duggar family was involved with. And I don't use the word cult lightly. It absolutely, given all the data, the IBLP organization, Bill Gothard as a charismatic leader, was absolutely a cult, high control, charismatic leader, da 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 da. We go over through all the criteria in the deep dive. So I had a lot of time to think about how that could play a factor. Now, in any group of people, you're going to have some people, some children even, who are going to develop sexual attraction to minors, and out of those people who are sexually attracted to minors or much younger people, a portion of them are going to develop into actual sexual predators, sexual offenders. So in any group, you know, in a group that doesn't involve any sort of cult, research shows you're going to see a certain rate of that developing. We can do a lot to reduce that rate. We're doing a lot currently, but we could do a lot more. So it's possible that within IBLP, within certain cult organizations within the Mormon Church, you're going to have the same rate of this sort of thing. But considering that we have these very famous cases, and, you know, it's an N of two, you have the Duggar family and the Frankie family, where seemingly they're in a high control a cult that involves the abuse and control of children. I don't know what sort of Mormon sect they're a part of, but, you know, we could imagine the sort of things that they're being taught. You know, I had a lot of time to think about how that actually could contribute to one of the children or more of the children becoming a sexual predator. There's no way to prove this, of course, because we couldn't ethically experiment on children in this way. But it does stand to reason to me anyway that it's possible that when you have a Christian cult, a religious cult that is extremely shaming about sex in a variety of ways. And doing the deep dive on the Duggars really informed me just how all-encompassing the mind control of these cults are, especially regarding sexuality. And because of their belief system or their focus or their Machiavellianism, who knows, they actually do not want people having sex out of procreation or at least marriage, right? And so what you have to do is you have to be constantly trying to suppress the urges and the needs of non-married individuals, particularly younger people, right? You have teenagers starting around puberty or maybe before who have affection needs or romantic needs, holding hands, hugging, kissing, making out, this sort of thing, and then advancing to more sexuality kinds of urges. And left to their own devices, children will, you know, there's a bell curve of experimentation, but with some people experimenting a lot and some people not experimenting, most people being around the middle somewhere, left to their own devices, kids, teenagers, young adults are going to explore that. And as long as we are supportive of that and we don't harm them along the way by brainwashing them and being too harsh about things and guiding them and being there for them as a secure person that they can come to, educating them, as long as we do all those things, which, you know, does happen for a lot of kids, then things generally work out okay. There are anomalies, of course, because you can't control for everything, but generally speaking, you know, it tends to work out okay. But that includes a flexibility regarding the allowance of children expressing themselves. You know, like your son has a boyfriend when he's 16 years old, they go to the homecoming dance together and you expect them home at 10 o'clock and it's 10:15 and you look outside and you see the car that they took and you see it maybe kind of moving around a little bit. And the policy that you have as a parent is, well, that's not fantastic, but it's not against the rules. You know, they're probably just kissing and making out and doing things that maybe we did when we were 16. And okay, maybe we'll have a talk when he gets home, but I'm not going to chastise or excommunicate or make the kids sleep in the snow tonight, you know, that kind of thing. So there's different approaches and different parents and different sort of cultures around this, but things generally work out. Now, I want to say that our society is generally completely screwed up about sexuality, particularly around younger people. So that damage is inevitable. But for the most part, in spite of that, you know, things can work out generally okay for a lot of people. But when you're living in a high control cult that for some reason just wants to eliminate that human aspect of life, you not only do you have to preach all that, but you have to put a lot of effort into controlling it because the urge is powerful. It is a biological, you know, for a lot of people, it is a biological mandate that you procreate, right? We evolved to have these urges. Not everyone has that urge, but we evolved at the very least for our gene pool to have a certain percentage of people that have varying degrees of urge. Some people with a strong urge, regardless of gender, and I'm not just talking about boys, people of all genders, to varying degrees, have strong ass urges to have some of that ass. Oh my God, that's the dumbest thing I've ever said, but it just had to be said, I guess. That's what popped in my head. So I say it to emphasize it's real, you know, and it potentially lasts our entire lives, right, to some degree, and ebbs and flows. Some people, point is it's a powerful urge. It's a mandate. It's a thing, right? Yeah. And so if the cult is trying to stop that, it has to be a full court press. There just has to be a constant barrage of shaming people and advice and control and monitoring and discipline. It just, because you're essentially, it's like trying to get people to not want to drink water or something. I mean, it's not that extreme, but it's in that direction. It's like people have when you're thirsty and you want to drink water, it's a strong urge, particularly when you haven't had any in a while, right? It's like there's an urge that builds over time, and there's a lot of cells and bones in your body that are pointing in one direction, and you're trying to stop people from doing that. It's inhumane. So you have to be very good about it. You have to be very persistent and hypervigilant. And when you're growing up in that system as a child, and then you also have parents that are screwed up themselves because some Christian organization, religious organization, or parent or something screwed them up when they were kids. And so the parents are all discombobulated around sexuality themselves. So God knows what sort of things you're seeing as a child, you know, because there can be a lot of different reactivity, a lot of different things that are happening. But anyway, so you're growing up in that, and you're also getting a little bit of a dose from society that also doesn't help. But you're 14 years old or even younger, maybe even you're 12. And you're starting to have a little bit of that feeling. And what does that do to a child with no guidance? And the only message they're getting is that's the devil. There's something wrong with you. We're going to punish you. You're weak for even having those kinds of thoughts, you know, particularly if the 12-year-old takes an action like masturbates or something, has a fantasy, and it's just drilled into the head. You're wrong. You're weak. There's something wrong with you. If you continue to do this, then not only is your life going to go down the tubes, but everyone's life. You're going to drag your whole family down. Literally, this is what's taught to them. Because if you're going to control a human urge, you got to, like I said, there's got to be a full court press. You can't just say, hey, kids, don't do front hugs, just do side hugs. Like, you got to come at them with all the shame and all the ridiculousness, right? So you're 12 and you're perceiving that. And again, this could go for someone of any gender. There are gender aspects to this, of course, because these cults tend to be very different towards boys as they are towards girls at the expense of girls. But it's not like the boys are treated well. They're just treated less badly, you know. But anyway, so you have this message, you know, it's this control, it's internalized, and, you know, you've been indoctrinated into this cult since you were born, so you believe it. And when you're younger, you believe things so much more black and white because you don't have nuance, you don't have the neurons to understand things in a gray area. So when you cross that line, you are a horrible, horrible human being. Like, you believe it, you know, entirely. And it creates, obviously, a very intense internal conflict, and there's no guidance. There's nobody, and especially if you're IBLP and you're homeschooling and you've cut them off from the internet and from any sort of person outside of the cult, you're just drowning in shame and horribleness. But there's this urge that is coming, that's piercing through the noise, and it wants what it wants, just like thirst wants what it wants and hunger wants what it wants. And what do you do with it? And you're stuck at home, and you're denying it. You're denying, I don't have this, I don't have this, I don't have this. For some of those people, we could imagine that they would have some interesting behaviors, that they would turn to their younger siblings. They certainly can't date, that's forbidden. They can't express interest. They might worry that even if they were to go behind the church and maybe hold a girl's hand or kiss her on the cheek, that the girl would tattle on them and then they would have to sleep in the snow for a month. So, and since everything is so cloistered in these families anyway, they're so enmeshed, and you're being taught by your parents that it's okay to exploit younger people for your own, you know, interests, because that's what the cult often does to people who don't have power. You can imagine someone concluding, well, maybe I'll just direct the sexuality towards the younger people. I need some release from this. I'm not excusing it. Josh Duggar has signs that maybe this was a part of it. I don't know. I didn't hear anything in this direction. I'm completely speculating. He could have just, you know, even if the family grew up outside of the cult, maybe he was going to be a sexual offender anyway. It's possible. But it does raise some interesting questions about the environment and under which these children are being raised. And we see, or these, you know, we know a lot about Josh Duggar, and listen to my deep dives on the Duggar family if you don't know about this. But, and now we're hearing another story, potentially, from the mom's mouth. God knows if any of that is accurate. But it is interesting, right?
Who are married.
If we're going to be sexual, that we do it inside the institution, the constructs of a marriage.
Yeah, based on very little information that I have so far on Ruby Frankie and Jody Hildebrandt, given the deep dive that I did on the Duggars, I have been wondering and thinking it's very likely that they are both within a very similar high-control cult, similar to IBLP that the Duggars were a part of. And the more I hear, the more it sounds like that is true. There might be some variations to that. You know, like in the IBLP cult, they were saying that for women and girls to wear tampons, that's a sin or something, it's wrong because it tempts them sexually or and it denies the future husband the ability to break her hymen, which is just dumb and unscientific and ridiculous. I mean, if you made a satirical South Park episode about that, you would be like, well, that's going too far. That's ridiculous. No one believes that. But millions of people did, and they talked about it openly. So maybe this cult or high control group that they're a part of doesn't believe in things like that. Maybe they do, but, you know, maybe not. So there's variations, but the foundations are the same, which is high control, abusing children. It is rejection of the secular world and maybe psychotherapy and the liberal point of view about parenting, and also highly focused on the control of children and particularly the control of sexuality in general. And the thing I wanted to say earlier is that cults often focus on sexuality because it serves the purpose of high control. Because again, you have this urge that is happening for a lot of people in the group. And if you have this rule that has been established and it's taken for as taken as a given, then the individuals in the cult have to struggle with their own urges and they have to shame themselves. It also excuses punishments to the group because you want to control everybody. It also separates the members because you don't want cult members to confer and to band together, because if they do, they get power, and you don't want anyone to have power. You want full control over all the lackeys and the members. And so you have to separate them not only from each other, and sex brings people together, presumably, but you also have to separate them from themselves because they're having these normal human urges, and you're separating them from their humanness, from who they are. And you've injected all this brainwashing into their head, so they're rejecting even their own bodies and their own selves and their own humanity. So they're separate from themselves, they're separate from the other members, and they're separate from society, because when they start talking about this sort of stuff, the society's like, you're a wacko, or the members will look at society and say, you are a wacko, and so I'm going to... So you're separate from society, maybe from other family members, you're separate from the fellow members, and you're separate from yourselves. And when you establish that, you can control the masses. And we are currently watching the Law and Crime Network YouTube channel. So let's continue watching.
And not just a marriage, just, you know, I go and I get married, but a marriage between a man and a woman.
Yeah, I didn't expect it all to be crammed in here. So yeah, anti-LGBTQ people, of course, it just has to be a part of the whole ridiculous, oppressive, criminal ball of wax. It's just... ridiculous. The obsession that these people have on LGBTQ people and the obsession that they have about sexuality. It's because to me, if I were in, because of course it makes sense because it's so much a part of this, always is, around the world. But if I were an alien, I would say, you know, you'd probably find more success and more longevity with your cult if you just accepted everybody. And you didn't exclude, right? Especially if you're following the Bible, with the New Testament, Jesus talks a lot about accepting and loving and not judging. So you just think you would probably last longer if you didn't, attack 10 to 15% of the population. You know, some of your members are gay. You'd probably find a lot, you know, and if you're gay, you're much more likely to leave the cult because you realize how stupid it is, right? So, and maybe there are gay people or trans people or bi people who want to be a part of your cult, but they can't because you by definition reject them, you know? So if I were an alien, I'd be like, you're really shooting yourself in the foot here. But of course, that's ridiculous because this, you know, you have to create an out-group, and the current boogeyman for the Christian right is the LGBTQ people and the libs. It's just like the Antifa, they're all out to get you. I just think it's so... I've been dealing with this my whole fucking life. And I've been upset about it my whole fucking life. I'm old. I'm 52. I was upset about this in the 80s, and I'm still fucking dealing with this. My fellow Americans are still fucking like this. In the 80s and 90s, I could excuse them because there was no advocacy. There was almost no voices. There were some, but there was very few. In 2023, if you're still holding on to this ridiculous fucking notion, there are people that I know who grew up with that notion that gay people are evil or sinners or disgusting or something. And as soon as they met a gay person, or as soon as they saw a gay person on television, like Ellen or something, they immediately just changed their mind. They're like, oh, huh, I guess all that was wrong. People can do that. You can be brainwashed and pull yourself out of it when data presents itself. I've seen it before. People close to me, people in my family who had very little contact with LGBTQ people, as soon as they just got a little bit of contact, they're like, oh, what I've been learning was wrong. Well, that's kind of obvious. I can still be religious. I can still be Christian. I can still be me. It's not hard. So if you're holding on to it in 2023, just makes me so angry, you know? Like, it's sad. What's wrong with you?
Who love God, which means they individually love God. So there's no lust in your marriage. It's I love me, I love God, and so therefore I truly love you, which means I will never take from you. I will never...
Did she say no lust? Because sometimes people within these kind of high control groups will at least allow for lust between married people, married heterosexual people. So, yeah.
Use you to make me feel better.
Jody Hildebrandt claims to have counseled thousands of people over the years. She says she's counseled families of all ages with her unique style of...
And I don't doubt that. Just imagine all of the people who she influenced to be abusive and all the abusive parents who were given license by her to do that and ideas and support to do what they were doing. Just imagine all those kids. You know, I've talked not with the kids who were... who had parents who were influenced by her, but, you know, similar kinds of things like that book, To Train Up a Child by Michael Pearl, that kind of thing, IBLP stuff.
Truth. According to the affidavit filed in support of the child abuse charges, two of Frankie's children had been at Hildebrandt's home last week. A 12-year-old boy climbed out of the window.
Wow, the home that I thought in my head that I was visualizing was not like that. It wasn't as remote. I mean, we're not seeing the neighbors, but that looks a lot more remote. I don't know why that changes things for me. It makes it much more harrowing for the children to have escaped and found a neighbor. Because the neighborhoods they keep showing in the news reports, I think, might be where Ruby Frankie lives, because it's one of those McMansion, and there's nothing wrong with it, but, you know, one of those neighborhoods that just sort of crop up in the middle of the desert and the windy roads, and there's house. It looked like one of those neighborhoods, and of course, very harrowing, but in my head, it's like you pop out the window and the neighbors, but this looks like you'd have to travel through the desert to get to the neighbor. I don't know, maybe there are houses right nearby, but... That's interesting. I mean, it's almost like some sort of evil compound. A James Bond movie, the villain would live in a place like that. I mean, you know, if you have a house like that, God bless you. It looks like a beautiful, expensive house.
Asking a neighbor for food and water. Duct tape was on his wrists and ankles, and he had deep lacerations from being restrained.
Yeah. I've heard worse stories clinically about abuse of children, of course, but... This is up there. There's different styles of abuse or different types of abuse, right? Loose categories that I've developed clinically over the years. Like a more common type of abuse that I will hear about or maybe you've heard about is you have a parent maybe who drinks too much or has a bad temper and just loses control suddenly. Like you're running through the living room and you're playing with your siblings and you bump into something and you know, you don't knock it over, but you almost do. And your mom just flies into a rage and comes at you and just like, I told you to stop playing in the living room, and you're running away. Okay. And then 5 minutes later, the mom has calmed down a little bit, might still be angry and resentful and verbally abusive, but isn't necessarily raging with her fist coming at your face. Or maybe even she connects with your face and then continues to berate you or something like that. That style is, of course, very abusive, but it is much more spontaneous and much more reactive to things. Things that are might even be more relatable to parents. You know, when you have kids and you've been telling them to stop playing in the living room and they keep doing it, you know, there's some upper level of your reactivity that, you know, is upper level, right? Let's say you're not abusive, but you know, it wouldn't be unusual for a very good parent to raise their voice and say, hey, you know, I told you, and get firm. So it's a little bit more relatable, you know, times that times 100. It's not hard to imagine that some parents would take that a lot further than they should, and because of the way they were parented or their lack of emotional control. This sort of abuse is, though, is on a whole level, you know, no good parent can relate to this. Tying up your children for extended periods of time, with duct tape, not feeding them, not giving them water. Like, that's in a whole other ballpark. No good parent can relate to that. So it says something about Jody Hildebrandt. It says something about Ruby Frankie that is particular. It's very particular. Sadistic, psychopathic, lack of empathy. I don't know about their personalities, but the actions lack empathy.
Then police said Ruby Frankie's 10-year-old daughter was found in the home as well, malnourished. Police say a YouTube video showed Frankie in the home 2 days prior, and that she was aware of what was happening to her children. Frankie and Hildebrandt are Mormons, and they talk about God in many of their videos.
Okay, I suspected Jody was also a Mormon, but we're hearing that explicitly here.
There was really no way that I could cover Jody Hildebrandt without risking, you know, defamation or whatever. So now that Jody Hildebrandt is in jail, a few courageous people have reached out and said that they feel safe enough now to tell their story. And one of those very courageous people is Jody Hildebrandt's niece, Jessie Hildebrandt.
Okay, so this is the main thing that y'all wanted me to watch. It is the podcast and YouTube channel called Mormon Stories Podcast. I remember watching him before for other types of stories like this. And he interviews Jessie Hildebrandt, Jody's niece.
Jessie wrote to me, it's hard to quantify the emotional and spiritual abuse and torture Jody Hildebrandt caused, and I think I'll probably have to do so anyways for the police. But physically, just to name a few off the top of my head, I experienced being tied up, blindfolded, punched in the back, my knees kicked out, and dragged by my hair upstairs. I was blindfolded and tied and thrown into a car and forced to lay down on the ground so I can't, quote, manipulate people into thinking anything is
wrong. Yeah, again, trigger warning. I have treated clients who have had one incident with one babysitter of something even much smaller than this that traumatized them for their entire life. When you hear it, just this onslaught of abuses and it's overwhelming, and it's hard to comprehend the enormity of it. And for the rest of their life, it affects them in various different ways. So imagine having not only millions of incidents like this throughout your childhood, but it was your parent. You know, it's different when it's your babysitter. At least your parents are coming home. But when it's your parents that are doing this, and then you have everyone else in the community, in the whatever sort of cult they're in, is also supporting this, it's enormous, the abuse.
Mouth duct taped. I wasn't allowed to speak to anyone, even if they spoke to me directly. Food withheld, forced to run, forced to sleep outside in the snow, forced to drop out of school, never allowed privacy, even when using the bathroom. 7 minutes to shower, 2 minutes to use the toilet with the door open. Wasn't allowed tampons because she was convinced I was a sex addict and masturbating with them.
Okay, earlier I was saying that surely this, whatever they're in, whatever group they're in, if Jody Hildebrandt is the leader or part of a larger group, I wouldn't be surprised if Jody Hildebrandt is part of a larger, whether it's a formal or informal or larger group. And so I was saying that I'm hearing a lot of things with Jody Hildebrandt and Ruby Frankie that is very similar to the IBLP cult, the Duggar family, right? And of course, there's a lot of other groups around the world who adhere to these ideas. But I was thinking, well, they probably aren't necessarily related because IBLP, I don't think they necessarily get along with Mormons and vice versa. So I was thinking, well, there's a lot of similarities there, but there's probably some differences. For example, we learned that IBLP forbade girls and women from wearing tampons because of some ridiculous reason. So I'm just going to take a guess and say that this group doesn't believe that because that's stupid. Like, how could you possibly believe that? But we even hear that. But that's sort of a side note. The bigger note here is that we're hearing about, he's rattling them off pretty quickly, but you could really do a deep dive on each one of those allegations, you know, like hearing that she was forced to run in the snow for hours to get the sin out, right? It's just that mindset, right? It's one thing to torture your children. It's another thing to say that you're sinning. You're getting into a child's head. You're getting into their soul. You're saying there's something deeply sinful about you. You deserve this. God wants this. God's behind me and the community's behind me. You know, I'm inside of you. I'm in your spirit, beyond your body, beyond the physical realm. I am punishing your spirit. There's something deeply inherently wrong with you, right? It's awful. But we heard about other things too. And you think about that compound that Jody Hildebrandt seems to have. I'm calling it a compound, a house. And it seems there's some indications that Ruby Frankie was convinced or in league with Jody Hildebrandt and brought her kids, two of her kids, over to Jody Hildebrandt. And Jody took over the discipline of the children. And that's where, you know, the duct tape and all that stuff. And then the kids escaped and got to a neighbor's. And we hear about that. But what we don't hear is how many thousands or hundreds or tens of thousands of kids went through the same thing but didn't escape. How many of the Frankie kids were abused over time at the Jody Hildebrandt house? But how many other families? Because we know that Jody Hildebrandt has been for decades working with families and probably with a very similar program. And that's usually what we hear in these kinds of cults and these kinds of criminals is that by the time they get caught, they have had a long path of escalation. You think, you know, extreme cases like Ted Bundy or Charlie Manson, there's a similar thing where criminals like this, they each step of the way, they're tentative, but then they get away with it and it just keeps getting worse and worse. And so in all likelihood for Jody Hildebrandt, for a while, it's been at this level, but, you know, it probably goes back decades. And we're hearing from Jesse Hildebrandt that all the way back in 2009, if I'm hearing it right, so 14 years ago, Jody Hildebrandt was already at this high level. So yeah, just think about all the other kids that don't get media attention because they don't have YouTube channels. You know, just think about all the other families that have been involved in this and all the other children who have been abused in this way. It's just, it's upsetting, obviously.
Welcome, Jesse Hildebrandt, they, them pronouns, niece of Jody Hildebrandt.
Oh, then a lot of people are misgendering Jesse. I guess I should have watched this up front, but Jesse has been referred to as she by a lot of other people, and I was figuring that they knew their pronouns, and so I apologize for not knowing that earlier.
Reputation and my credibility and kind of used previous problems that I was facing as a teenager, being angry and sad and angsty, and capitalized on that as a reason that anything that I say is not true.
Yeah, this is a well-known tactic within cults. We saw this in Nexium, actually. It was more deliberate in that in Nexium, Keith Raniere would have the people in the inner circle commit crimes. They would film it, and then they would just overtly tell the cult members that were being the victims, they would say, if you leave the cult or you accuse of anything, we're going to release this video. But, you know, short of that, what cult members and leaders will do to control people is they will, well, what they do is they harm the members. The members are psychologically struggling and will have behaviors from that struggle, right? They might have a period of addiction because they're just trying to cope, or a period of high rebellion, and maybe even a period of crime where they shoplift or they become violent because, you know, you put that much pressure on someone and something's going to burst, right? And then the cult turns. So the cult is the problem, is the original factor in why the teenager is acting this way. And then they turn around and use that as a way of discrediting them. And we're hearing that from Jesse.
A Mormon background, right?
No, I know. When people find out, they're typically pretty surprised. I tattoo. I'm a tattooer here in Seattle. I do American traditional.
So it's a nice little connection there.
Combine that with reports of how she treated men specifically in her therapy practices. And then you combine that with the information that she apparently has a real history of dual relationships and inappropriate relationships with the women in the couples that she's counseled.
Okay, so I think the host of Mormon Stories podcast is saying, at least what I'm hearing, I think, is that there are allegations that Jody Hildebrandt and her practice over decades was overly harsh to the husbands and nicer to the women, and maybe also had quote-unquote inappropriate relationships with the women. I think implying that maybe Jody Hildebrandt is gay herself or queer in some way. And, you know, it's a story that we all have heard many times before, that when you are queer and you are being raised within a high-control religious group, you have a limited amount of choices, none of which are very pleasant to you, especially when you're inundated and drowning in the cult. You can try to get out of the cult, which, of course, is very, very difficult, or try to express yourself within the cult, which, of course, is, you know, potentially life-threatening at times. Or you can try to suppress your urges, and you can try to get a hold of it. You can try to get control of it. You can try to, you know, get on top of it. And that can lead to a splitting off of your personality, not a split personality, but in the psychoanalytic sense of there's the sexual, the real person that you are, say a gay person, and then there's this imposed, you know, fucked up superego that's been affected by, you know, what's around you, that is coming down hard on who you are as a human being and has to constantly just be pressing down on it and berating yourself and controlling it. And when you have these warring factions within your psyche, one of the defenses that was identified over 100 years ago called projective identification, we will project one side of that dyad outward, and we will identify with the other side, and we will sometimes even find someone that fits with the other side. And what I think you might be getting at is, you know, when Jody Hildebrandt comes across a queer person such as Jesse Hildebrandt, then Jody Hildebrandt, given that conflict and that propensity for projective identification, you find people that are queer, if you're Jody, because you made that choice to suppress and control and berate yourself. So you find someone that's queer, and then you attack them, and you attack them because really what you're doing is you're attacking yourself because you internalize that voice. And you find someone that represents that part of yourself that you're denying, and you attack it, and you attack it, and you attack it. And that, of course, is a story we've heard a lot of within the Christian right, conservatives. There are a number of famous cases where you have someone who is spearheading bigotry against LGBTQ people. And then at some point it comes to light that they are gay themselves. And you're just thinking, what? So it, at least in my model of understanding personality and within the object relations and, you know, a lot of people in the psychodynamic, psychoanalytic world, the explanation is that it's not a scientific understanding of personality because we can't open the brain and look at it, but it is a model for understanding, and it does pan out for a lot of situations. Projective identification is a powerful tool for me, understanding myself and my clients and people around me. If you want to learn more about that, you can search projective identification on my channel and listen to some deep dives on that. You might have to be a patron, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, it's all speculation about Jody. So I wonder what he's referring to, though. Although, I don't know, that's really secondary to the abuses that she has committed.
She said something to the effect of, yes, being gay is evil and, you know, pleasures of the flesh and yada, yada. But if I were to have sexual relationships with my friends, if we were to, like, it would be different because there's a deep emotional connection there, and that's different. And like, we were sitting in someone's living room and she said this, and I was just like, what? Yeah, that's called being gay. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Who knows what that says, but it might say something, right? That's interesting. Yeah. Again, in some ways, and I think Jesse feels bad for Jody along these lines, that Jody, along with Jesse, both victims of the bigotry within not only our society, but also within this religion. And yeah, so, you know, you feel bad for Jody in this way. Could that be a factor in the abuse? I don't know. Maybe the struggle on the inside, creating a lot of turmoil, could be a factor, but you know, Jesse went through a similar problem of being chastised and believing that they were sinning in a horror. You know, I didn't show the clip, but Jesse was saying that they were fully on board with the Mormon religion and the particular type of Mormon religion that they were ascribing to in the family. The way that they described it, it was exactly like IBLP, traditional gender roles, homeschooling, you know, just all of the stuff. And for Jesse, they took a different path. Jody took a very particular path. So I don't know if we can necessarily attribute Jody's behavior to that. The other thing that Jesse went into, actually, which was interesting, but it was a lot of speculation, and Jesse was couching it as such, you know, because Jesse is the niece of Jody, right? So Jesse knows Jody's father because Jesse, for a time, was, I think, being raised by their grandfather, which was Jody's father. So Jesse was basically saying that the father to them, to Jesse, was, you know, the grandfather, Jesse's grandfather, was a good guy and someone that Jesse looked up to or respected or something. But then Jesse quoted Shakespeare, pointing out that, well, but I don't know what Jody went through as a child. I only know my grandfather based on my experience. He could have been a very different sort of parent to Jody and everyone else. But they did point out that the grandmother, Jody's mother, Jody Hildebrandt's mother, was very stern and very harsh and lacked a lot of nurturing. That's basically, I'm using different words, but that's essentially what Jesse was saying. Who knows, but it does raise a question about Jody's upbringing. I think Jesse was saying that Jody was the youngest child out of several children, 7, 8 children or something. And, you know, who knows, but, you know, there could, something happened to Jody when she was growing up. Let's just assume that. And the germination of that problem probably developed early in life. Hard to know. It'd be interesting to know, right?
So I was like, wow, like, my aunt's powerful. Like, she's fighting Satan. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
And this is, as far as I understand it, over the past 20, 30 years, the most recommended therapist in the Wasatch Front by the Mormon Church, because every single person that's reached out to me to tell a horrific story says that it was their bishop that recommended Jody Hildebrandt because...
Wow. So I didn't know, I couldn't have even imagined this. I don't know why I wasn't imagining this, but I have been really trying to pay attention to Jody Hildebrandt's license or her qualifications. She calls herself a counselor. She calls herself a counselor, but I was thinking that it was a non-clinical designation, someone who just calls themselves a counselor, a parenting coach or something. I didn't actually think that she was actually trained and licensed and practicing. I guess I still don't know that, because back in the day you could practice, and especially if you're in a high control group that doesn't talk to the outside world, then anyone could be considered to be a professional or a clinician, I suppose. But it kind of sounds like Jody Hildebrandt was legit licensed in Utah or California. At least that's what I think I'm hearing. And that Jody Hildebrandt was famous for being one of the best therapists around. Now, maybe she was. Maybe she was very effective. And if I saw sessions, maybe I would say, oh, yeah, that's not what I would do. Or maybe even that's what I would do. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of things that you face as a therapist. Parenting is a sliver of that. So who knows? But it's also highly possible that if I watched even a sampling, I would say, oh, wow, that is horrific what she's doing. So, which we could imagine, right? The way I haven't been reacting to all the bits, but Jesse just got done telling a story when everything changed. Jesse tells a really interesting story, how they early in life, you know, a lot of kids in the family, Mormon, very devout Mormon family. And Jesse talks about how they were very distant from the father, but not a terrible relationship, but very distant. And Jesse actually really liked their mother. The mother was kind, but also very much indoctrinated into the cult, but not extreme. And for Jesse, they were very inquisitive, maybe on the rebellious side of things. And Jesse talks about their mother saying that their relationship was good and that the mother was a really good mother and someone that Jesse would go to for comfort. But the mother was very indoctrinated into the cult. Anyway, so Jesse is describing their childhood as they were on the rebellious side, on the inquisitive side, but very much trying to do the right thing, very much believing in all of the cult's high control messages. You know, Mormonism is right, God, evil, sin. Jesse was fully indoctrinated. There was very little questioning that. But because Jesse is a very inquisitive and smart person, they started to, it was interesting actually hearing Jesse talk about the role that the different kids had, that if you wanted dad's attention, and maybe generally just parental attention, there was politics, sports, and a few other things. And the older kids in Jesse's family had already found their niche. And what Jesse decided consciously was, okay, I'm going to be the kid that knows a lot about religion, knows a lot about the Book of Mormon. So Jesse sat down and read through it 13 times, which is really amazing, and started to discover some inconsistencies with dates not really lining up with the Bible, and also some questions about, like, well, wait, why were Black people not allowed to be priests? You know, that whole thing, because if you know, you know. And the questioning was seen as bad, as you're a bad kid because you're asking those questions. And I've heard this before. I've treated clients who have experienced this kind of problem where they're fully indoctrinated into Mormon particularly, but really just any religion. And they're just asking questions. You know, they're so into it that they want to know, okay, what is Joseph Smith say about this? And, you know, what does Jesus say about that? You know, they're just inquisitive. And then they come across some inconsistencies, not because they're looking for them, but because there are a lot of fucking inconsistencies. There's a lot of weird things, you know? And you're just like, oh, okay, what about that? What about that? And then you ask these kind of forbidden taboo questions, and you get a very strange response from people. And so Jesse was talking about that. And then Jesse says this turning point happened when they were at dinner at Jody Hildebrandt's house. Because remember, Jesse's father is the older brother of Jody. So they're going to Auntie Jody's house. They are having dinner there, maybe Thanksgiving, I'm not sure. And Jesse couldn't eat any of the food because they were vegetarian at the time, maybe still. But nothing on the menu, nothing in the meal was vegetarian. So Jesse was upset about that. Teenager and maybe being Jesse puts themselves down saying, yeah, I was probably being a snotty kid. But I'm thinking, after all you've been through, I can imagine it would probably be understandable. But anyway, so Jesse was being impertinent in some way and went to another room. And then the parents had a conversation. So Jesse's parents had a conversation with Jody, and it was apparently decided that Jesse's whole family was going to go home and leave Jesse with Jody, and Jody was going to fix Jesse. And when, you know, so Jody comes to Jesse, says, "So your family left and you're now under my control." And the feeling of, Jesse didn't really describe it, but you can imagine the feeling of terror. Jesse talked about, you know, in the movies when you zoom in and zoom out on someone and suddenly the protagonist realizes what's happening. That's really what it felt to me. You know, just that your life being turned upside down. Yeah, just imagine, especially if you already knew Jody's thing, just being left in the den with the lions, right? Just being left without any lifeline, right? Without your mom, without your siblings. You're just left with the enemy, with an abuser, with a criminal. It's like a horror movie, right? So that's what they're talking about. And so for Jesse, that was maybe the turning point of saying maybe Mormonism or this particular brand of Mormonism is not for me. I think that's what they're talking about. But anyway, then we hear that Jody is this renowned clinician within the Mormon community and is being referred many, many clients. That's interesting and worrisome.
Which was a very common theme about, like, through the entire process of living with Jody, was if someone liked me, if someone felt sorry for me, it was all because of manipulation. And I was a masterful manipulator. Constantly, I was told this. Constantly. To the point where, I mean, I believed it. I was like, you're right. I must be this horrific. And I was already believing I was evil because I was gay. And so, like, she plays into things that are already there. She finds the hot point and then drills into it.
Wow. Yeah. It's interesting getting details to Jody Hildebrandt's method. You know, you think on the abstract, you figure something's going on there, but to hear from one of the victims themselves, it's chilling. That Jody Hildebrandt to Jesse and countless other children, and maybe even adults, has been using this method that is endorsed heavily by the church to break people down in this way, abuse people, get inside their minds. It's, wow. And if you hear about this in a book about the Spanish Inquisition, you're just like, yeah, well, you know, that was centuries ago and things were different. This is happening right now. Before this broke, the story broke a few weeks ago, I'm assuming, well, we know that Jody Hildebrandt was doing that to the two kids that were found by the police. But, you know, think about all the other people that Jody Hildebrandt has been using these tactics with, torture and using her clinical clout and skills maybe to, like, get inside people's minds and convince them that they're... I don't know if I reacted to this clip, but Jesse was talking about how Jody had totally convinced Jesse that while they were battling it out, because the family left Jesse with Jody, Jody was saying, I am speaking, you know, the Jesus and God are speaking through me, and the devil is speaking through you, and I am trying to stop that. And Jesse admits that they believed that, because Jesse was completely indoctrinated in the cult, and Jesse was a child, so how could Jesse have fought against that in their minds? And so that notion, you know, and I've talked about this before, but just imagine what that would do to someone, especially a child, to believe that you are of the devil. You know, it's one thing to make a kid feel like a piece of shit and worthless. It's another thing to equate them with Satan himself, especially when in these cults, you have a very robust feeling of who Satan is, right? And the sort of people that hand themselves over to Satan.
And, like, I wasn't allowed to speak to my parents. I wasn't allowed to speak to anyone alone. And then it got to, then, like, with the duct taping, I wasn't allowed to speak to anyone. So if I was at church and I wasn't duct taped, and a church leader came in, because this happened, a church leader would come and be like, "Are you okay?" And I would have to just stare at them. Because she also had spies. She had people reporting back to her anything and everything that I did. So if I did talk to someone, she...
My goodness. Wow. It's like a cult within a cult. You have the cult of the Mormon church, and then you have Jody Hildebrandt creating a like a subsection of a cult within the cult and supported by the larger cult. Like Jody Hildebrandt was her own charismatic leader. Yeah, that's interesting. I could see why Jesse, upon learning about the story about Ruby Frankie, would say, this isn't a story about Ruby Frankie. This is a story about Jody Hildebrandt. Yeah, who knows? But wow, the tactics used, psychopathic. On the other hand, it's possible, given the rhetoric within these religions, that people like Jody Hildebrandt aren't psychopathic, but they believe they're following God's will. It's hard to know.
Found out somehow. The amount of paranoia and fear that I had, where I was like, I can't talk to anyone. And also people saw me duct taped. People saw that these things were going on. And other than like the few people that like went to Bishop and being like, hey, something's wrong, no one did anything. And I believe.
Yeah, I was suspecting that. I mean, at the very least, because you hear about the kids being duct taped at Jody Hildebrandt's house and you think, well, Ruby Frankie probably knew about that. And then when you think about the scope of this, that for decades, Jody Hildebrandt has been doing this at this high level, because what Jesse is referring to is 14 years ago, and it was just as bad then. So you just think the scale of the abuse, and then you think that it's all endorsed by the Mormon Church, or at least this subsection of the Mormon Church, which is endorsed by the larger government of Utah and of California, or the local governments. I mean, just think, like, you know, when you think of cults and you think of the harmful cults like Charlie Manson or Branch Davidians or other kinds of things, I think that's the stereotype, right, that I've had. But there's this massive, millions and millions of people within this massive cult, even if you just think about the United States, and it's happening right next door. It's the cult next door for all of us, or the cult in our own house. The cult, Jesse actually is talking, saying a lot of things that I've heard from a lot of clients along who have told me about this. I haven't necessarily had clients come to me for this specifically, but once we get into their history, I hear about these kinds of things. But I've had clients before who had a very, very similar story, where they grew up in the Mormon Church. It was very high control. Everything was swept under the rug. Jesse mentioned that. And that you can't question it at all. There can be no, you know, I wonder if for Mormons it's worse. I know Jewish people who, you know, there's a wide variety of Jewish folks, but I know Jewish people who, and actually one of my mentors, Phil Cushman, Jewish himself, and would talk about how for the Jewish people that were around him, it is a very important tradition to question the Jewish faith and to, really discuss and question your own bias, question your own assumptions, and listen to other people and have a discourse and figure things out, and always know that you don't really know the will of God. It's an approximation. You're doing your best. For my understanding within Judaism, it's written into the religion that you are critical and skeptical of your assumptions about God and about the written word of God, this sort of thing. And I wonder if for Mormons, they swing so far the other way because, one, because it's a cult, but two, because there's so many problems with the story. You know, I'm guessing you're younger than me and you've seen the South Park episodes and you probably know. I mean, there's so many ridiculous things because it's a more recent cult. There's a lot of religions around the world, but the Mormon religion is rather new. It was invented by Joseph Smith a couple hundred years ago-ish or something, maybe 100 years ago, I can't remember. But it's recent enough that we have enough written and history around how it was developed. And when you hear the story, it's like, it's ridiculous. And it's easier to see those, Joseph Smith and the people around him. It's easier to see him as just a regular human being. When we go back 1,000 years or 2,000 years, we don't have a lot of history to depend on to corroborate stories. So it's all kind of this amorphous, you just have to have faith. And also, you just don't have any accounts to kind of give the story more richness to mull over. But with Joseph Smith, there's a lot to mull over, and it's ridiculous. There's so many dumb things about it. Now, if you're a Mormon or you want whatever you want to believe in, I will fight tooth and nail so that you can believe what you want to believe, whatever religion you want to believe. But when it harms people, then that's where I draw the line, and that's where we should be drawing the line. So now some would say we should just get rid of religion altogether because it, you know, runs this risk of harm happening because you start to fall in love with your own ideas. But I don't take that stance. I understand it, but I don't take that stance. I think there's a lot of good that religion or deism, belief in God, belief in the supernatural can give people. It can be used for good, and it often is. I grew up in a church, you know, it was Christian, and it used religion for good from my memory. Love, forgiveness, non-judgment, charity, acceptance, fellowship. A lot of who I am as a person actually comes from my experiences in that Christian church, not only just as a person during sermons and that sort of thing as a kid, but also I was in youth group pretty heavily. And a lot of what we did was we would sit around in a circle, sing songs, and we would talk about our feelings because it was a teenage group that was led by a young adult, like a 22-year-old guy or maybe younger, I don't know. And a lot of who I am comes from that. So, you know, religion can do a lot of really good things, and it can do a lot of really bad things, obviously.
Because of the culture of the church, of this patriarchal familial setup, of like, my dad is the patriarch of our family, right? He's supposed to receive revelation for his family. And so if he is in support of something, it must be good. It must be because God gave him revelation that this is the right thing.
Yeah, so we're hearing a very similar story to the Duggars and IBLP. It's just systematized patriarchy and sexism and high control of women and girls, and it's awful. slots right into history and right into our societal ideas about gender, and yeah, pretty awful. And it's written in the Bible. There are passages in the Bible that absolutely support this point of view, so they have their support, and yeah, pretty awful. And I think what Jesse is getting at is, and therefore, if you are a girl in a family like this, you have no power. If the dad or someone older than you just decides that 2 + 2 = 6, then 2 + 2 = 6. That's just the way it goes. And you have no ability to fight against it, even in your own mind, because you're like, well, I'm in this cult too. Yeah, dad, if he says something, that's from God.
And so it creates the system of not challenging things that should be challenged. And it keeps it disempowers, especially women, to not challenge anything and not voice anything. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Especially in, I don't think I've ever thought about this before, but you know, if you watch this channel, or even if you've just watched this video, you know I love to spout about things and think about things and explore things and challenge things and what I see and even in myself. And just I'm just trying to imagine, I can't, but I have a sliver of being able to, you know, imagine what it would be like to grow up in that and to be a woman and to have no freedom to even do that in my own mind, to not ask questions. I was a very inquisitive kid as well, probably annoyingly so, similar to Jesse. And yeah, I can't imagine what that would feel like to just shut it all down and to kill a part of myself to survive. Yeah, just awful.
This, I know this timeline is going to be kind of...
No, this is amazing. And I'll...
All right, well, I'm going to have to adjourn there because it's getting very late. And I'm just realizing that this interview is over 3 hours. It's about 3.5 hours. And I'm only an hour through it. So I worry that some very interesting things, I'm sure, are later in the interview, but I just don't have the time. And at the time that I'm recording this, I have a lot of other things I have to get to, actually, because this is before the weekend where we're having our 15-hour live stream. And, you know, there's other kind of things I have to do. So I feel bad that I have to cut it short here. But it's demoralizing to think about the scale, even if we just think about the United States. And, of course, this is going on all around the world. But it's demoralizing and depressing and scary to think about the scale of this movement within Christian circles to abuse their children and to lean more into fundamentalism and patriarchy and high control and cult organizations. It's really scary, and it's threatening. You know, there's so many. We're talking like a fourth of Americans or something. We're talking about a lot of people. I don't know the exact stat, but there's a lot of these individuals. It's not just like the Westboro Baptist Church where there's 30 members. We're talking about millions upon millions of people who are indoctrinating even more millions upon millions of children into this. And of course, they're having millions and millions of more kids. You know, the amount of kids within IBLP and Mormon Church is exponentially more numerous than the average American family. So it's pretty awful. And the siloing of their thinking, you know, the way they cloister themselves and their echo chambers, how can we change this? How could it possibly change? And yeah, I've worked with clients like this who tell stories that where they start to question things and, oh yeah, this is what I was getting at earlier. They start to question things, and then there comes a point where it's usually around 13 or 14, and they start to think, because that's usually when kids start thinking for themselves or trying it on for size. And they're just thinking, wait, is this whole thing a sham? And they often have a little contact with the outside world, so there's maybe some influence there. They love Taylor Swift or something, and Taylor Swift isn't Mormon, right? Isn't it? I don't know. Whatever. You know what I mean? And so that this question starts to emerge, and then everything starts to come into question. And then you start to push back as a child, but because of the high control and because of the methods of sweeping under the rug and rejection and excommunication or disciplining the devil out of the child, because you're just questioning, you get thrown away as a child or harmed. It's like you're either 100% in or you are dead to us. And I've seen that before. And it's just in disaster movies or in MCU movies, Marvel movies, there's some evil, you know, Zod, General Zod, or what was his name from Superman 2? There's always some evil force that, like, comes at Earth or comes at the human race, and, you know, they're going to get us. We're doing this to ourselves. These are human beings and human institutions and human governments that are doing these atrocities to ourselves. We are our own villains. We don't need aliens to come from outer space to get us. We get ourselves. It's so depressing and it's so sad. It's just so pathetic that we're so stupid as an animal. What could you expect? I mean, we didn't evolve to understand these things. We evolved to feed ourselves and procreate within a small group of 100 people. And we're very good at that. But when it comes to these large-scale movements and influence and cults and religions and propaganda and echo chambers and fake news and social media, we didn't evolve to survive that. And will it destroy us? I mean, we're destroying ourselves and just causing a wake of damage. Jesse mentioned that they've been in therapy a number of times, and Jesse seems like they've really found a good place for themselves, and Jesse speaks a lot of authority about a lot of things, seems very strong, and I'm going to take a guess, though, that there's still a lot of pain and still a lot of hurt and a lot of trauma I don't hear that, but you know, it's possible. It's likely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, before the Duggar deep dive, I knew about it. I knew about all this stuff, heard about it, treated clients within it. But after the Duggar deep dive and also this Ruby Frankie story, I just really feel the scale of it. Yeah, I think another thing is I live in Seattle, and of course these folks are in and around Seattle. There's a fair amount of Mormons in and around Seattle, but I don't really come into contact with a lot of this, and the Christians I do know are nowhere near any of this. Although I do know some people that are in this camp. They're not close to me, but people close to me know to tell me about them, and so it's not that far afield, but it's pretty far from me. You know, some of you might live in communities where you're just like, yeah, I mean, everyone's like this, and I'm the one weirdo in the community. So for me, anyway, this has been I'm getting a real felt sense for the scale of the problem and the ongoing nature of the abuse to children. It's going to continue. There's not enough CPS workers in the United States to combat this. And how do you combat it? You have, if it's just an isolated family that you're going at, but you're going after organizations and you have to get them to stop doing their stupid shit. You have to get religions to stop doing half of what they talk about. You know, you can keep this half, but you got to get rid of this other half. That ain't going to happen. That is not going to happen. Half of them are Congress members themselves, right? Presidents. So it's pretty depressing. I guess I'm just really sad. I guess I have an impulse to say something uplifting or optimistic, but, you know, fuck it. Why? It's not my responsibility. I didn't fuck this up. Why do I have to somehow make it nice, nice? It's not nice, nice. It's bad, bad. So, well, if you're with me still, we're in it together, you and me. So let's hang together, support each other. Let's fight where we can. But, you know, it's a big thing. We're not going to be able to change it in and of ourselves. And even if we all work together, we might not be able to change it. But we can be together, you and me. And please take care of yourself. And I'll take care of myself. I was going to say, don't worry about me. But you can feel free to not worry about me, but you can care about me. I can care about you. I'm not a fan when people are like, don't worry about me. It's like, hey, you know, I can worry about you. It's okay. You know, I'm not going to cry myself to sleep every night, but I do care. And so that's me stopping myself from saying that. But, you know, we're in this together. We have that. And take care of yourself because you deserve it. You really, really do.